And I never forget when I was running with her, and we were running along at sort of, you know, pretty average sort of pace. And she said, yeah, no, sprinting's quite different because you kind of go like this. And it was like warp speed. And I sort of looked at her, and then she was about 100 metres ahead of me. It was just incredible.
Kia ora tato. That was Guyan Espiner. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
This is Dirt Church Radio. Interesting conversations with interesting runners. So, Wild Things.
Yes. All new Wild Things.
Yes. Same Wild Things.
Same Wild
new
Things.
New Rob Bathgate.
Same code.
Same code. DCR 2021.
Mm.
All caps. We'll get you 15 months VIP access for the price of 12. And I mean, there's a lot to poke around. There's a lot to unpack being a VIP Wild Thing. I mean, you get access to the Peak Directory, challenges, discounts in the shop, all sorts of weird and wonderful things that, I mean,
the amount of race entries that are given away via Wild Things blows me away, actually. Yep. In fact, I think there are more races given away on Wild Things than there actually are races in Aotearoa.
So you're saying that you're implying
I'm just saying it's very generous. I'm just saying it's very, very generous. Yeah, I'm going
to
walk that back.
As a way to hook people into paying for this site. Yeah.
We give away 15 races for the price of 12. No. Moirangi Macerator,
60K.
Use your code DCR2021 to get 15 months VIP membership of Wild Things for the price. No. Yeah, 15 months for the price of 12.
Yep.
You're happy. Rob's happy. We're happy because he gives us a little bit of a for each one that uses that code. Yeah.
Yep.
Do it.
Go to wildthings.club for all the goodness. We should talk about Scott Running.
We should.
Sometimes we don't talk about Scott Running, but Scott Running's always there.
Look, I'm showing you.
Eugene is wearing a Scott Running top as we speak, and if I was to open the small wardrobe that this computer's sitting on, I'd be able to show him his Scott jacket that I've had since Wu2K.
I wondered where that had gone.
We're in lockdown, buddy. Yeah, it's tucked up. It's nicely folded.
Talk about lockdown.
I haven't worn it, but it's in there. Scott jacket, Scott poles, Scott shoes, Scott bags, Scott fantastic. If you go to scottrunning.nz and check out all the amazing goodness that they have there in store. I love my Montane, my new Montane stretch ultimate stretch ultra jacket stretch. It's a stretch minimus. Minimus stretch, ultra
seam sealed. It's like it's got all the seams sealed.
Yeah, seam sealed jacket. So yesterday, living on an isthmus, right? Yesterday went for a run. It's burning hot. I've got tan lines. This morning went for a run. Horizontal rain and my hands were numb by the time I got up to the top of the road. But my Minimus ultra jacket from Montane that I got from Further Faster, it's just fantastic. And it's the second one we've had, isn't it? Because we sort of wore the ass out of them, really, and they're just amazing. Like water repellent, light,
breathable,
and for a sweaty man like myself, are just so useful. So if you go to furtherfaster.co.nz, check out their range of jackets, check out their range of outdoor equipment. I still got my eye on a jet boil. Not that I have any use for one, but you know.
Hey.
I love them.
Why not? Yeah. So if you're in Otatahi, if you're in Christchurch, get into Further Faster and make sure you sing the jingle because Rocky loves it. He really does.
Highlight of his day.
Yeah. So here's the tune.
It goes something like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio.
Episode 161, we made it.
We did. We made it. We've made it past the miler. And what a conversation. That we had with Guyan Espiner. those of you outside of Aotearoa New Zealand, you know, Guyon is one of our premier investigative reporters. He was the political editor at TVNZ. You guys have worked together for like 20 plus years, and he's a runner.
Yeah, we worked together at TV3 for a while. He has he was a presenter on Morning Report. Now he's got I was going to say kick-ass, but I don't know if I was allowed to say that, investigative reporter job at RNZ, and doing amazing work. But he's a, you know, journalist, broadcaster, runner, as well as someone who's done so much to advance the normalisation of te reo Māori in mainstream media. He's just a generally good sort. He's also, a couple of years ago, discovered that he had type 1 diabetes, and we have a good conversation about that and what it's meant for him in terms of his running.
Absolutely.
Something, yeah.
It was, and coping and talked about coping with lockdown and you know lockdown continues here in Tamaki Makaurau, and hopefully by the time this comes out we've moved down into level 3, but I mean that's level 4 with takeaways, really, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. Are you craving takeaways?
Well, I was going to ask you the same thing. Are you craving takeaways?
Not really, to be honest.
No,
I don't know. I feel like I want to support the local cafe. As a way of supporting our local business, but I don't know, maybe five weeks, you know, just got used to cooking everything and stuff. So yeah. What about you guys?
No, I'm the same.
Are the kids campaigning for something?
No, they're not. This is the thing, because, well, they don't eat McDonald's or stuff like that generally. We're the same in terms of wanting to support our local businesses. But I mean, especially for us, like lockdown last year really broke the back of like me buying lunch. So in fact I would like someone to just make me food, because you know, like,
do the dishes.
That's more do the dishes and make the food. But yeah, it's not something I'm craving for, but I'm willing to have my head turned, put it that way.
I was thinking in terms of a conversation last week and the pandemic and dealing with the pandemic. You know, last week we, in our kōrero with Maz Crowe, you know, of Protect Our Winters, I was sort of reflecting on the fact that in the face of a pandemic, the world, an imminent threat to us, humanity kind of has acted mostly to deal with it. Climate change, not so much, aren't we? We were sort of slower to get on board.
I think, I guess the thing is, and if we think about the pandemic too, and we kind of Guyon touched upon this too, maybe offline, it ceases to become, it's a political decision, right? It becomes an inherently political decision, and I'm hopeful that we can kind of, that was a really reflective conversation. I found myself going back to thinking about it all week and thinking about like what do we do and how we can actually improve stuff, but and you know, moving on this week as someone who, you know, has covered massive stories and all sorts of stuff, you know, alongside yourself over the years, and it's just such a treat.
We all figured out that we're quite old as well, actually, which is quite that's right. Anyway, how have you been, man?
Yeah, look, I mean, life carries on. Like, it's life carries on. The one thing I'm just loving, running is very much, and I don't usually attribute this much meaning to it, it's very much keeping me sane at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm loving running on the roads. And I'm loving, you know, like, I love running on the roads. This is not a paid endorsement or anything. I got a real pair of cool, after listening to you, got a pair of cool ear for the bone conducting ones.
Yeah. Have you tried that thing with the teeth?
No, I won't do it. It's terrible. I'm not listening to the music. I'm not listening to, they're not tooth phones, but these bone conducting headphones. And so I can hear, they're not intrusive.
You can still hear the traffic.
It's just been amazing. Just getting out and running around the roads and following white lines everywhere. It's been just...
Are you discovering new parts of your neighbourhood that you haven't sort of...
No, I haven't been. I've just...
Doing the same
I've pretty much covered everywhere. Yeah, I don't... My place isn't very big, but...
Yeah.
Man, running's been a real salve this week. It really, really has in the most kind of concrete way possible. Yeah. How about you, man?
Yeah, kaita nei hei. Aho. Sort of stepped up the training a bit this week, although... with restrictions, it's been, you know, around and around and around the same places, trying to figure out how to do hill reps when you live at sea level. And,
yeah,
you know,
it's tough.
Oh, man. This is tiny little, basically a judder bar, and I've been doing reps up there. A couple of mornings I've tried to sleep in to take advantage of you know, the lockdown and not having to commute and stuff, but it's so light first thing now. Mm. We've sort of really turned a corner, haven't we? So,
yeah.
You know, you just got to get up and do it, don't you? But anyway, it's, like I say, hopefully we'll be into level 3 by the time this podcast comes out and inching back towards level 1, hopefully, you know. Anyway, we'll get there. Right, that's okay. Right.
Christchurch woman.
Mm.
Harita Davies is running the Sri Chimnoy Self-Transcendence 3,100-mile race in New York City for the third time.
Because why would you want to do it once? Why would you want to do it twice? Go and do it three times.
3,100 miles.
Yeah. Upon completion of this year's race, she will hold the second greatest amount of finishes for any woman in history and remain the eighth woman to ever complete the race. She really is one of the most spectacular yet unknown athletes. She in Aotearoa, isn't she? She flies under the radar, isn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, those who don't know about the Sri Chimnoy, I mean, Sri Chimnoy, he was a spiritual leader, and his emphasis was on sort of, amongst other things, on movement, on athleticism, to sort of, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering this, to kind of promote that sort of self-transcendence and triumph of human spirit. Mm. It was conceived as both a spiritual and a physical journey, and I guess if you're running 3,100 miles around a city block, what's that roughly? What is a city block? It says here it allows athletes to test themselves unlike any other marathon, ultra marathon, in order to meet the goal of 3,100 miles, which is just shy of 5,000 kilometers, in 52 days. They must log an average of 60 miles or 96 kilometers per day.
Yeah.
They begin at 6 a.m. and they run for extended periods throughout the day, taking breaks as needed if they want to. Jeez.
Yeah. So you can go up till midnight, then you have to get off the course between midnight and 6 a.m. I mean, as we record this, Harita has run 800 miles. So that was 12 days, 14 hours and 7 minutes of running. And she's lying in third place. So, but it's not really about the race, but still, you know, third place. We'll keep a close eye on how Harita does over the next few weeks as she carries along, and wish her all the best. What a legend.
I love this. How it says, the race is not intended to be the goal for all.
Yeah. I was gutted. I was in, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I was in Melbourne, in New York for work 2 years ago. I remember when we used to be able to travel. And I flew out the day that they were starting the day after. And I was gutted because I wanted to get along and see this human spectacle, really.
It is a human spectacle. My goodness me. Mm.
Anyway, all right. Next one. Tour de Jean.
I mean, oh my God.
The big dog, really, isn't it?
It is the big dog. 330-kilometre race, which takes runners up and over 4,000-metre peaks in the Alps. And runners have to figure out how to stage the race themselves, taking breaks in refugios in the mountains, going through mountain villages. Epic is the only real word you can use to describe it.
So there's a cutoff of 150 hours, total elevation of 2,400 metres, starts and finishes in Cormier.
24,000 metres.
Yes. What did I say?
2,400.
Yeah, no, not that. 24,000.
No. 15. It's amazing.
I mean, it's, you know, translates as Tour of the Giants, so should be a clue in the name. Mm. What was the podcast that Jason Koop talked about it on? Was it on a Billy Yang podcast?
He talked about it on Billy Yang.
There was a Billy Yang podcast where Jason Koop talked about running this race. You should go, if you're interested in this race, go and have a listen to that. It was amazing. We spoke to him when he was training for it.
Yeah, we spoke to Jason Cooper when he was training for the race.
He was having to run up Pikes Peak, have a pizza, run back down. run back up Pikes Peak, have a pizza, run back down. But yeah, he did a full kind of blow by blow on a Billy Yang podcast. Have a listen. It's absolutely amazing.
And I mean, as I speak, I look down and I can see, you know, his book, Training Essentials for Ultramarathons. And, you know, he's a learned guy. He's quite a serious dude. And you think he's, you know, he's quite a resilient human being as well. And then he put all these Instagram stories up while he was running the race. And I remember he was just in tears. He was just like weeping, like just exploding into tears and passing out, basically.
Yeah, and sort of running while asleep, all sorts of things. Yeah. Anyway, have a listen to that. But this year, for the women course record holder, Silvia Tregoros of Spain took the victory, and her third time. Wow. 89 hours and 57 minutes. And she was well ahead of Melissa Paganelli of Italy in second, and British runner Nikki Spinks took third.
Awesome. Mm. On the men's side, Franco Colle of Italy claimed the course record in his third victory. Again, his time of 66 hours and 43 minutes lowered the previous course record of 67.52, set in 2017 by Javi Dominguez by over an hour.
Mm.
The second place was Jonas Rossi of Switzerland, who led early on and was with Colle until the third and final night, when Colle pushed ahead by an hour and a half. Peter Restorp of Sweden was third.
Mm. It sounds like a really good race, eh?
It does.
Oh, you get to the third night. The third night. I know. Anyway, Run Rabbit Run. The brilliantly named, it must be said, Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Yeah.
That's a great name for a place.
Yeah. And Run Rabbit Run's one of those, it's that quintessential, when I started getting interested in the sport, like, that was one of the ones, you know.
Yeah,
Western States, Leadville, Run Rabbit Run.
Yeah, and, you know, it's run at high altitude, it's run at high altitude to start with. There's 22,000 feet of climbing in the 100-mile race. So what's that? That's sort of, what's my math?
So it's about 7,000 metres.
Yeah, 7,000 metres of climbing. And it also it features $75,000 of prize money. So
that's a lot of prize money. Wow. So Adi Barclay finished first amongst the women with a time of 20. Even? Eh?
Adi
Bracey, sorry. Finished first amongst the women with a time of 20:23.53. She set the pace from the start and had a 37-minute winning margin over Alyssa St. Laurent, who crossed the finish line in second place in 21:01.18. Emily Caldwell came across the finish in third in 21:19.18, 18 minutes behind St. Laurent. So, I mean, tight racing.
Yeah, for a 100-mile race, for them to finish that, you know,
it's not as tight as Katie Wright and Fiona Hayvice.
True.
That was tight racing, but
in the men's, Dave Stevens first in 18:01 ahead of Anthony Costales, who had a really tight battle with Dave before Dave stretched out to a 38-minute lead in the end. Jeff Mogavero crossed the line in third in 18:48. Fourth place, Nick Curry, was just 34 seconds back, and he apparently sprinted to try and get on the podium. I wonder how much that would have been worth. What does 34 seconds cost him in a way? Yeah. It's $75,000 on the line. Look, we've said this before, but if you want to follow those big races, have a look at I Run Far. They do such great coverage, and are the place that you can find lots of great details about these races. I included one for your bit of your Welsh heritage here, Matt.
Oh, I read it, but I'd just like to talk about, we talked about Michael Versteeg and his FKT attempt on the Colorado Trail. It was not to be, basically. So long story short, he pulled the pin. Just the extreme difficulty of the course.
Yeah.
And it was just
too much.
Just too much. Yeah. Too mecky for him. And he, you know, he won the Cocodona 250-mile race. So this is a man who is
capable.
Putting himself in the... he's very, very capable. But yes, I felt the cockles of my Welsh heart... really did pulse with joy. So the Montane Dragon's Back race.
Yes. Said to be the world's toughest mountain race.
Hmm.
Big call.
Yeah, it's a big call.
Six days?
So Welsh runner Simon Roberts and Canada-based Brit Katie Mills raced to victory. Simon, 33 from South Wales, finished the six-day race from Conway Castle to Cardiff Castle in 45 hours, 42 minutes and 11 seconds. He ran to the finish line in the beautiful Castle Grounds with runner-up Russell Bentley.
Mm. Oh. Yeah.
Says he got emotional after seeing his parents. I'd just be emotional after running for 45 hours. Simon, he's the first Welsh athlete to win the race. He said, I'm elated. I said at the start I would win. I trained enough and I was confident I could win. I've done what I set out to do, but I still can't find the words to explain how I feel. Oh, my God.
Wow. And yeah. Katie, who lives in Vancouver, placed an impressive 7th overall in a time of 61:12:54. You know, she hugged her mum and dad and sisters at the finish line and it feels really, really good. Yeah. to get here and not to run anymore. I'm just so proud to have finished. It means more than anything. So she had a few injuries the last few years and, you know, to get to the finish line in one piece, just she found amazing. So, yeah, that does look like an amazing run.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Again, multi-day, right? Like 45 hours of running.
Mm. Sure, it's not a patch on running around and running loops around, you know, our places, but, you know, people do what they have to do.
Yeah, if you can't get into the park and the Dragon's Pie, back. I mean.
Yeah, why not? All right.
Greatest run ever.
Yeah.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show when we ask you to write in to us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be that time that you won, you know, the spine race in Wales. It might just be run around the block or something, Tour de Chance, something that sung to you for some reason. You could send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. This is from Anthony Eels, and he says, funnily enough, my younger brother Aaron and his wife, Christy, have both had a greatest run on the podcast. So now that's three of us from the same family. I think
that
might be... That is a record, yeah. So he says, well, lads, it finally happened, my greatest run ever. After dwelling on it for a while and not being convinced I had one, it was recently delivered to me by Wanaka. Now, it's a bit of a hot topic, still some emotions with Wanaka, people enjoying themselves.
I feel this is part of the healing.
Yeah, let this be a boon to all of those who just reflectively clenched their teeth when they heard the word Wanaka.
Ngāi Tahu Mita.
Yeah.
That's wānanga.
Hmm?
So they say K instead of the NG sound. Actually, it's wānanga. So we all learn something from this, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's a massive diversion. I'm sorry.
It's a massive diversion into current events gripping the nation. But anyway, let this be a healing. We live in Dunedin. But travelled to Wanaka in early June for my son Henry to have a crack at the under 11 parkrun record, his fourth record, he says.
Wow.
He hadn't run the course before, but it was pretty confident he could do it. My wife suggested when we woke that I should do my long run that morning as well. After not being organised and doing any prior planning, I quickly jumped on Wild Things Trail Directory, see? And boom, Royce Peak Mount Alpha was right behind where we were staying. I quickly packed a bag before leaving for parkrun and we all headed down. There's a bit of a breeze coming off the lake, but Henry still managed to beat the old record by 22 seconds. Job
Boom.
Done.
What
I ran right. two and it went all right. In the 22s and only a minute or so behind my 10-year-old. Grabbed my pack and left from there. Good to ease up the pace and explore the lake. Found the track over to the car park for the slog up to Roy's. It's been refreshingly quiet on that track for a year or so now. There had been the first decent snowfall of winter recently, however the ascent side was clear. Hitting the summit was very windy and equally cold, so on with the thermals and jacket and away into new territory having been up Roy's before. Far steeper than expected, and also the track was filled with snow since it was south facing. Interesting descent, and then an awesome climb through the rocky bluffs. On checking my topo maps on the phone, I only realised then that Mount Alpha was actually higher than Royce Peak. I thought it was going to be not much more than a blip on the ridge heading down. Excitedly then, was heading up for another summit, which was really quite windy and clagged in, but nonetheless awesome. Heading down for keeps now with some gale force winds, making running difficult but improved as altitude was lost. A nice long descent down Tusky Farm tracks into Spots Creek, which eventually turns into a boggy farm track run for yet another terrain. Run for yet another terrain
change, I think that's supposed to change. Say. That's my bad.
By now the forecast rain had started and it was getting quite heavy. I hit the Cadrona Valley Road and phoned home for a pickup, having done the best parts without needing to complete the loop this time anyway. 3K of flat road running in the rain was a weird way to finish after such an adventure, but the sum of all the parts really made it awesome. Cheers, Wanaka.
Wow. Thank you, Anthony. And that's it's cool that it wasn't sort of a big planned mission. He just sort of jumped in and did it.
How cool. Yeah. I've not had a chance to run there. And it's somewhere, you know, thinking about not bringing it down to lockdown. You start thinking about this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Yeah, definitely. But thank you, Anthony, and the rest of you, please, you know, send them in.
Keep sending them in. There's been quite a few coming over lockdown, it must be said. But we enjoy seeing them. People enjoy hearing them and reading them on our website. Right, on with the show. Guy in Espinner, runner, journalist, broadcaster. He's been dealing with type 1 diabetes, and we talk a lot about that. Mm. We talk a lot about Te Reo Māori and his use of it and introduction of it to mainstream media. And we have just a good old jolly old chat about lots of races, actually, don't we? We covered a lot of ground, so to speak.
Yeah.
A really enjoyable conversation, and here is Guy on now.
Dirt Radio.
No mai haere mai kia Guy in Espinner, ke te noho ia ki Tāmaki Makaurau no o te tahi ia. Nā mihi nui, tēnā koe, eho.
Kia ora, eho.
We've been talking about this a while. Getting you on.
We have. It is one thing better than running, it's talking about running. It's a little bit easier too.
It is. How is lockdown life going for you?
Well, lockdown life's going okay. Running's a big part of that. Running's always been a big part of my mental health, to be honest. You know, it's pretty vital. It's kept me sane when I was a political reporter in the gallery, doing crazy things and doing crazy hours. It's doing the same thing for me in lockdown. So I don't go too hard on the knees. With my first half century under my belt, I've been running every second day. So I've just been doing 10Ks. It's been ploughing up Mount Eden Road and back down Dom Road. I do a 10K every second day. Sometimes I go iara every day. It's been really good just to do that, you know, hour long run, and yeah, just good for the hini naro.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's just such when it's part of your life, it becomes such an important part, isn't it? In that sort of mental health sense of being able to just have time to just disconnect and think about nothing if you want to, or think about the problems of the world if you want to.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, for people listening who have just started running, I remember when I just started running, and I thought, how do you get to this zen place? Because when you just start running, your whole body's sort of screaming at you to stop, and you might get the stitch and stuff. But if you keep doing it for months and then for years, you do get to the place where it's a thing of relaxation. It doesn't mean you're the super fittest person in the world. It just means your body's just so used to running. And when you get to that point, it does set your mind free. And that's the nice bit about it.
Hey, look, Guyan, we lined up this chat, and we've got a few things to talk to you about. One of the things we wanted to talk to you about is just coming off the back of Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori. In our pre-interview chat, I said, can you come along with some running-related kupu or kiwaha? So what do you got for us? No pressure.
Kua pau te hau, ihoa. Kua pau te hau is probably the one I'd like people to come away with, which means I'm stuffed. You know, great to be here to Oma. Like, Oma is a run. Oh, ko pau te hau, ihoa, ko pau te hau. So te pau is to consume. You know, I might say to my daughter, ko pau I a koe tokai, have you consumed your food? So, but ko pau te hau means I'm stuffed, mate. So, you know, we could go to a lot of, there's a lot of words you could use in Reo Māori for running. Oma is to run. Obviously, anyone who did Oma Rapiti at school would probably know that. But kua pau te hau is a good kiwaha. Certainly how I usually feel.
That's amazing. I've never heard that phrase before. I mean, you've been recognised for how you've helped to normalise Reo Māori within mainstream media. But how did that start off for you? I mean, what was the antecedents of you becoming so interested in learning Reo?
I married a Māori woman. And when we had our daughter, Nico, we decided that we'd love her to have her language. And she does. She goes to a Rumaki Kura immersion school. So she speaks Māori 100% at school. She does English. She says, oh, we do English on Fridays. So they do English on Fridays. She's seven. When she was about, so it was about 2017, 4 years ago now, I decided, I want her to have her language and I want to be there. I want to be in it. With her, and so that was an inspiration for me. And then when I started learning it, I was like, "Oh, I want to, like when you do anything, I want to get this out. I want to share this stuff." And I had a microphone and at Morning Report, so I just started doing it. There was no big plan. There was no, mission statement or spreadsheet or anything. I just started sharing what I was learning and just got into it. Got a bit of backlash along the way, which, as Eugene, who's probably known me long enough, knows that would only make me more determined. Me day, the word for determined. Me day day, it's a nice, easy word to say. It just sort of grew from there. So it's quite interesting to see, all the presenters on Radio New Zealand doing it now. It's quite nice for me just listening to it, and it's really cool. And every Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, we seem to be pushing further and further, and the corporates are getting into it, and it's great, I reckon.
Yeah, and it more of it sticks, doesn't it? Each Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, it just sort of more stays within mainstream media. And it's been such a... If you look back 5 years, it's almost unrecognisable, I imagine.
Yeah, and our expectations get greater from just, kia ora or, doing the mahi, and that might go. And now you see interviews where, that they're bilingual interviews and someone will switch over to reo Māori. And that's my personal hope for Aotearoa, is that you have a country in 20, 30, 40 years where, we can weave between the languages, which would be really cool in my view. And I think that we are slowly growing in that direction. It's really nice to see.
You've been on that sort of dual path of, it's a personal journey, but you've been doing it publicly. How hard has that been to sort of juggle that?
Oh, I've never really taken that... I've tried to keep it fun, I guess, and not to try and do it as a sort of a, as a lecture or a you must or you should all be doing. And so that's kind of the approach that I've tried to have for it. And I tried to have fun with it on Morning Report when I was doing it, and translate just to try and bring people along, I guess. That'll mean failing as well. I mean, it's nai mai tapa is another good one. Embrace the mistakes, A hapa is a mistake. Yeah, nai mai tapa iho. Just, go for it. Karawhiua. Just have a crack, That's always been my attitude.
Why do you think, I love that it started so organic, not to use such an overused phrase, but it wasn't, you guys read out sometimes, and I'm aware that you must have gotten some pretty horrific backlash. Like there'd be some people really kicking off about the fact that you dare to use one of the other official languages of Aotearoa New Zealand on New Zealand's official, radio station. I love that it was just a personal choice that you made to integrate it. How do you deal with what do you think drives people to be so incensed by the use of reo in everyday language?
Yeah, we did get some horrendous feedback, and I know that that people still do, but it probably has dropped away. And I think it is a bit of a death rattle, to be honest. From a dying breed. I think it's probably just as simple as having the power taken away from you, frankly. And it's a pretty stark reminder. As a language learner, if you go into a wānanga and, you're at the bottom of the heap, which is, most Pākehā of you going into that, you get to see what it's like when you don't call the shots and you don't have the knowledge and you're not the man in there, you're at the bottom. And I think I think that's personally a really good lesson. But I think it's basically people worried about having their position as a dominant partner taken away or threatened, or that, oh gee, I might have to try and learn something that I'm not that comfortable in. And I personally think that's a really good place to put yourself in. Mm. But I think it's a frightening one though too. And I thought Rawari Waititi had a good analogy too. When he talked about coming into Parliament, he said, I now know how Pākehā must feel walking onto a marae, because it's a different environment. I don't know the rules here. Who's in charge? What do I do? And so I think that's probably behind most of it, really.
Mm. It's that interesting thing, isn't it? And it's not about I remember the Billy T. James show, and I can't remember the character who played the treaty lawyer. He was a Pākehā New Zealand comedian. And the joke was, when, you know, we've thrown you all into the sea, what will you do? You know, that was the thing. And it seems like it's not even about that at all, though, is it? It's just even that slight little bit. It's not like you're relinquishing any. I mean, the system is so vastly set the other way, right? But it's almost that little just that inch of leeway that there might be another, I don't know, place at the table, or whatever sort of analogy you want to use.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like much, does it? Like to give over 20 or 30 seconds of your ears to as you say, one of our official languages, but it seems to be a bridge too far for some people.
We had better talk about some running. Your running and your life took a hit a couple of years ago when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Can you first of all take us back to your diagnosis and how you realised something was up, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Happy to talk about that. In fact, it's just gone my 3-year anniversary. I think it was September the 10th in 2018. I had lost quite a bit of weight, and I'd been really, really thirsty, and I was like, what's going on here? I went to the GP, and he just did a blood sugar test and basically just immediately said, look, you've got diabetes. And I knew nothing about diabetes. I think I was, 72 kilograms or something, and I thought, this is the last thing I'm going to have. But, of course, type 1 diabetes it's a very different condition. It's insulin-dependent diabetes. So I have to inject insulin 5 times a day. You need insulin to stay alive. If you don't have it, you're not going to live. And until 1922, when they discovered that, you died in a matter of weeks. So very fortunate to be living in a time when we understand that. But, a big hit for running was it's difficult to run because basically – normal people have a blood sugar range that stays between 4.5 and 7.5, and you don't really need to know what the numbers stand for. It's a bit like the Reserve Bank target. It's a target, and your pancreas is like the Reserve Bank, and it keeps your blood sugar level bang in that range, whereas I have to inject the insulin to keep it within that range. And so if I run, for the first 20-odd minutes of running, right, your blood sugars will go up. You start running, expending energy, or if you were doing weights, and there are all sorts of other chemical reactions. Your body realizes it's doing all this. Your cortisol and your adrenaline start going, and your blood sugars will go up. After about 20, 25 minutes, they'll start to plunge. You keep running, and they'll plunge down through the ground, and you get into real trouble. So if you go way too low, you have hypoglycemia and can end up in a coma or die. And if you go too high for a long, elevated periods of time, that's when you get your amputations, your retinopathy, that sort of thing, because you run your blood sugars too high. So you've got to keep it within that range roughly. Now, so the challenge for running is pretty strong, because if you're a distance runner, you're going to smash your blood sugars through the floor unless you keep your carbohydrates up. So I just went for an hour run before, and I know that that's about 30 grams of carbohydrate for me. So it's about a medium-sized banana. So one banana an hour I pretty much work on. But, I was really nervous. I just did my first event about, when was the duel? About, was it 2 months ago, something like that? Mm. And I was pretty proud. I did the half. Took me 2 hours 37 of the duel, which is up Rangitoto, and it's pretty gnarly sort of terrain. So it was as I say, 2.5 hours. But that was my first event since I got type 1, and I was quite I was scared, actually, to be honest, about how it would work. This is a bit of a science experiment. I've kept running all that time, but not the longest I'd done before that was about an hour and a half, because I just didn't know what's on that other side, like, you know, what happens if you, and how do you measure it and all that sort of stuff. So it's, yeah, it's quite a big deal. But I was quite proud to actually do that, to do that race and run for that long. I mean, I've done, you know, I've been on my feet for nearly 8 hours, not quite as long as you guys probably, but I've done the Kepler, you know, three times and stuff. So I know about running long distances, but with type one, it's a bit of a new, bit of a different game.
And how did that, I mean, how was it for you sort of physically? And did you have to be religious about, like you said, like that 30 grams of carbs an hour? I guess it would change in terms of your, the amount of output you're putting out, and like, yeah, the terrain on the dual.
Yeah, totally. No, so, and I'm old school with my type one, like a lot of people now, especially if you can afford it, because a farm act won't fund it, but you can buy all these flash gizmos. I for a while had one, you put a whack of sensor in your arm and you can test your sugars on your, you can see it on your watch and all that. But I don't like being sort of half an android and having something in my arm all the time. So I'm just an old, I just use the old finger prick test. So I don't like to do any of that stuff. And I was really proud because I finished the race. I was pretty proud of 2:37 because I hadn't run for a long time. I was quite happy. You know how you have two times, like me and my mate were doing it, and we were like publicly saying, oh, 3 hours would be good. But then you have your own time, which is like 2.5, I can do it. So, and it's always wildly optimistic. You know, I always have flipped between these two things. So anyway, 2:37, I bowled in it. But, and I immediately checked my blood sugars and I was at 4.7. And I was like, bang, because that's like, if I did your thing now, you would be about 4.8. That's what normal people sit at. Unless if you had McDonald's and an ice cream, you might sort of go to like 6 or something, but you'd be, so I finished dead normal. But then on the ferry on the way home, I started to get quite sick, and I nearly had to end up in hospital because this other weird thing happened through, because I hadn't eaten enough food. I won't bore you with it. It's a science experiment, man. And I'm going to do it again. I think I'm going to use, no sugar Powerade, because it's got the electrolytes in it. And so there's a few things, and I've got this guy at Green Lane that I go and see who's pretty onto it in terms of type one and long distance running. But yeah, there's not a lot of good info out there either. It's like, it's because this is such a small group of people who want to run long distances and have type one. But it's totally doable. And I was pretty proud of getting there on in a good time and living to tell the tale.
Well, I mean, let's take it back a little bit. Not a little bit. Let's, you know, you said you've run right throughout your career. What, or your life? What was your start with running?
Start with running was, I remember my mother had died and I'd broken up from a long relationship, which might be a little heavy for this podcast. But I,
oh no, go for it.
No,
yeah, but yeah, I and so, and then that brings us to about to 2003, and I remember Corin Dan. He said, oh, I do the round the bays, and it was 7Ks in Wellington. I was like, oh, give it a go. And I loved it. And then I had heaps of time on my hands and a lot of grief to work through. And I just started running. And I just run and run and run and found that I could do it and that I loved it. And sometimes I'd be running for 3 or 4 hours and just get completely lost. I used to run around Red Rocks in Wellington. I don't know, just burning up the K's and just thinking time and just processing time. And it's just become something I can't really sort of do without. But it just really was really important for me. I just worked through heaps of shit, you know. Just doing the yards, man.
It's interesting, isn't it? The longer you sort of run, I have people come up to me and go, do you still run? And it's like, it's not like I jogged for a while. You know, or Eugene, who's been doing it for pretty much since you could run. Hey, you've been running. It's like it becomes not what you do; it's who you are, or part of who you are. It becomes
totally
integral
yeah,
to your existence.
Mm. And I've you know, have used running to work through grief as well. When Dad died, I remember, and it was just so wonderful to have this thing that I could go out and I could be bawling my eyes out and not have to worry about any, you know, being ashamed of it or anything or whatever, or I could be angry and just be angry and just run hard, you know, for a while just to get that anger out. And it was just so useful to have this thing that I could use to be able to work through those emotions, which, you know, as males, we're not very good at it often.
Yeah, and it's so portable too, isn't it? Yeah. I've run in some great, crazy places, and when I used to travel a lot for TVNZ, to just bring your shoes and you'd be running in crazy, crazy places, you know, run through Havana or under some LA bloody motorway or through summer in Kyoto or something, you know. Yeah, just a great thing to be able to do. I tried to stop a couple of times. It's like a, you know, drug addict or something. And with diabetes, I thought, shit, I can't do this. And I tried to take up mountain biking, and I stayed off it for a while, but I just came back to it, and I've worked it out now, and I'm back into it, and absolutely loving it. You know, loving my running again. So it is kind of addictive. And important.
Just quickly back to the diabetes for a second. Is there anything, like, if I was running with you, say, or running with somebody with type 1 diabetes, is there anything that you should look out for, or you should do if you do get into trouble or things? Are there things that others need to be aware of?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the most likely thing to happen that it would be of concern would be to go too low, to go hypoglycemic, and so you've got to make sure. And it's really the person who's got type 1's responsibility. Yeah. But it'd be good to check with them if you were that they've got something to counter that, and that's usually as simple as glucose tabs or any form of sugar, Coke or orange juice or whatever it is that they use, or bananas are good for longer distance, but they're not going to, you need something to shoot you up if you are really in trouble. A lot of diabetics will always carry glucagon thing, which I call the Pulp Fiction needle. It's the thing, things get really bad, you know, that scene in Pulp Fiction, I don't know, where you get the glucagon pen in. Like if you are running really long distances, like, you know, some of the runs that you've done, like the Tarawera or something like that, you'd want to carry one of those pens. So it's mainly preparation. Are you carrying your kit? If you are going a long run, like at most of a day, and you could get caught overnight, you need to take insulin as well. So it's mainly just the preparation. But I'd want to make sure, if you were doing a long distance with someone who had type 1 and they were, you know, maybe even not too experienced, I'd just make sure you had the cell phone, you had some stuff to push them back up if they were going to go low, and they had all their kit. It's that preparation. And that's one of the hard things about type 1. You can't really go anywhere without your kit. So you become the dude with the bag all the time, because you just got to carry your kit around. So it's mainly preparation.
Mm.
There's so much more to think. I remember when I started nursing a million years ago, on the ward, the first ward I worked in, they had a jar of jam, you know, and that's what, because it was old school, you know, and you got the spoonful of jam and actually under the lip of someone. And
is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Heard COMID.
Yeah. That's what it was. Jam into the mouth. And, you know, like this salty old psychiatric nurse would come along with the jam spoon into the mouth, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they were unconscious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
That's, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. You need something. It's drink or that sort of liquid, isn't it, if you're at that, because you're not going to be able to swallow. So, yeah.
Mm.
So, gosh, I mean, there's so much. I just want to share personally. I said to Eugene today, I feel a little bit starstruck. And I feel starstruck for two reasons. A, because my middle daughter, when I said, she's like, who are you interviewing this week? And I was like, it's Guy in Espen. And she's like, oh, he's the guy that used to wake me up every morning because I get up, put Radio New Zealand on, and then make my coffee, right? And she'd know by the beeps what time it was, like that she doesn't have an alarm clock. She just gets up to the pips, you know. But Eugene, before I met you, my first kind of, not experience into ultra running, but I remember you guys, you and Duncan Garner, Guy, and you did a current event show.
Yep. Yeah, what was that called? Yeah, we did Third Degree, it was.
Third Degree. And you actually had Eugene on the television, on the TV back in the day.
Well, he was working. He was part of the team.
His Tarawera experience. I remember sitting on the couch with my wife going, can't believe this is happening. This is incredible. Like, this is this human being. What are they doing? What are they all doing?
100 kilometers.
Yeah.
I still ask myself that.
That is just insane, isn't it?
I challenged Duncan to take up running on that. Remember, we had those kind of ridiculous things where we'd come in the studio sometimes. And as part of that, I challenged Duncan to take up running. I don't know that he did. maybe we need to follow up on that.
I think that challenge is still unmet.
I mean, you went from 2003. You know, you're running to work out grief of the death of your mum and the ending of a long term relationship, and then you've taken on some of the most epic runs in Aotearoa. You know, you've run Kepler 3 times. Was that part of the challenge, or like? The race itself, or did you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I probably like a lot of people who get into running. So I did the round the bays, and then I did, I think, a couple of half marathons. And then I started thinking, I want to do the marathon. And so Rotorua was my first marathon in 2005. I ran a 3:27. You remember all the times, don't you? You just, and it was a big deal. I did the classic, got 20K in. I was like under 1:30, and I was like, I'm gonna take 3 hours. I'm going to nobble 3 hours in my first marathon. And I literally hit the wall. And I'd been reading a lot and sort of kept the mystique of the marathon. And I kind of wanted to know what it would be like to hit the wall. And I wasn't intending to do that, but I literally did the classic, newbie rookie mistake. As I say, like under 1:30, the first half of the marathon, and then hit the wall at about 34K and just went completely black and just lost my mind, my body just slowed right down. I got really angry. I'm never going to do this again. Was struggling on. And then I realized, I can get in under 3:30. And I picked back up again and I finished it. And I finished it in euphoria and then I just got really into it. I did 2 marathons a year for 10 years. So I did like 20 marathons. And I did all the, not all of them. I did lots of the off-road ones, like the Motutapu down south, which is, Wanaka to Arrowtown, is it? Yes. Over the Motutapu station, the one that Shania Twain bought back in the... That is a beautiful, gorgeous run.
Yeah, you've always raved about that run, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic run. The rivers crossings, they keep you honest. I mean, they are freezing cold. And there's always some psycho, eh? Like I ran with a guy who was running in bare feet before that was cool. And I tell you what, he started pretty well, but then I saw him later on. He was shredded up and he was trying to go through these rivers. But that to me is mountain running heaven, eh? Because it's just real, the gradients are really nice and smooth. That's a beautiful run.
What's the terrain?
Yeah, just farming sheep track type stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Sheep country station.
Yeah.
Not that steep, but a few just decent hills, not big long climbs, just rolling country. I think it took me 4:01. Again, I was really keen to bust 4 hours for the Motutapu and I couldn't quite do it. Since that was sort of 2010-11 sort of time. That's a beautiful run. I did Tongariro Crossing, which was cool, and a number of other sort of out of the way halves. Hawke's Bay Marathon, that was a crappy one. You run down a cul-de-sac through some suburban thing and back again. At the start line, there's some guy with a roll your own durry and stuff. I think I was about 13th out of sort of 27 stragglers or something. But I just find 2 marathons a year to do, and I just did them, and travelled around the country doing them quite a few ones, and the Kepler.
It's pretty special, isn't it?
That Kepler's amazing. Yeah. To try the Kepler 3 times was at 8:46, 7:46, and the last one I did just over 7:30. So that's the but the winner's like under 5 hours or something. It's insane. Or is it under 4 hours? It's 4.5 or something like that, is it? It's something
They're
crazy.
Close to 5 hours. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Just under 5 hours. Yeah.
There's a long term what was his name? the Australian chap. I can't remember his name, but his record stood since, I want to say 2006. Is it?
Yeah, it'd be what, like 450 or something. It was just under 5 out. Yeah. There was a Japanese dude who used to come over too and clean up pretty well. But yeah, to run, I mean, that's a good road marathon pace, isn't it? 12K an hour. To do that. And the 14K of that is up a mountain.
Well, and this is the thing, talking about road marathon, Daniel Jones has won it the last couple of years. In both years, it's been the alternate course because it's been stormy and what have you. In both years, he's worn like road shoes because he didn't want to be slowed down by trail shoes. And he's just like, it's almost messianic, you know, he's across the water.
Well, like, yeah, that's it, isn't it? It is really interesting with running because, I mean, you do get, I remember, specifically with Kepler, you get into that mind-body separation. I remember running along thinking, how much do you want this? How much pain are you prepared to put up with? And you almost get into this conversation between your body and your mind. And your mind's going, well, I really want to get under 7:30. And your body's saying, yeah, but this hurts too much. You've got to be kidding me. And you sort of end up having this sort of weird sort of philosophical separation of mind and body to try and work out who's, you know, what the compromise is going to be. And it's interesting.
You also sometimes reach a point too where it's just like, I'm just over this. I know it's going to hurt, but I want to get back because I just want this to end. Especially in at Kepler where you have that long drag along by the river and you can hear the finish line, but it's still so far away. Oh, it can break you.
Yeah, because it's basically 30K on the flat, isn't it? Well, we say flat, but yeah,
it's not flat.
Yeah. No, it's not, yeah.
And it's always, you know, and you're listening to the announcer and it's always like, you know, Mervyn Johnson, he's 87. You know, like, oh, for God.
There's always a guy in front of you, eh?
Yeah. Who's blind, like, his Labrador's done it 20 times. It's always, that seems to be, that's what you hear coming across the water. It's demoralising, utterly demoralising.
Yeah, yeah.
It's me.
I was always stunned at how you managed to fit in so much running, especially in Wellington, where you had, you know, such a busy job, but you always found time to run. How did you manage it? I mean, even now, you know, you've got a busy life.
Yeah, in Wellington, I'd get my running out of the way really early, which was really cool. So I used to get up at like 5:30 and run for about an hour 15 or an hour 20. And I used to come back and listen to Morning Report when I was political editor at TVNZ. And so it was great. It was great turning up to the gallery, having run 16K or something in the morning. You felt great. You know, so that'd be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday and Friday would be probably big drinking days back in those days. And then on the weekend, I'd do my long runs. And I would, you know, I'd do, you know, 3 hours on a Saturday or 3 hours on a Sunday. So I'd probably only ever run for, at the tops, 5 days a week. I'd usually have a couple of days off, but I'd start real early. And then the rest of the day was a write-off because you probably wouldn't be home until 7 o'clock if you'd gone live on the TV news. And summer would be a different story. But yeah, so you're always trying to fit in. I mean, I think kids are the hardest one. If you're on your own, you run any time, mate, really, eh? When kids are around, it's always a bit harder to fit in. But you find, don't you? If you really love it, you'll find a bit of time that you can make your own.
Those early morning, I mean, that's perfect crime, you know. And you keep it is, isn't it? It's like you've pulled off something.
Yeah,
I always find that, and you keep it. You can, like you said, you can kind of turn up to your place of work or whatever. And I'm sure some people are like still doing, you know, lunges and telling everybody. But if you keep it secret too, that's like, don't talk about it. Just hold it.
It's such a good feeling.
Like you've accomplished this and then you don't have to do it. That's the other thing too. If you get it, if you make the bargain, if you don't snooze your alarm, then you don't have to keep making the bargain, doing the mental arithmetic of how you're going to fit the run in. You know, like I'll go out at midnight and then I'll run for this or I'll do this. It's done.
Totally, yeah. That's the great thing about early morning running, isn't it? You've got it out of the road and away you go. But, yeah, I mean, I always used to find it in those high-pressure jobs too, like, yeah, the psychological power of marathon running is because we use that analogy a lot in life. Oh, it's going to be a marathon and this is going to – and you're kind of like, oh, well, that's cool. If it's going to be a marathon, I'm in there. I always found that, you know, sort of be triumphant about it, but he always found that quite a psychological, powerful thing, just knowing that you could run a long distance. I always found that quite a good piece of armour.
Mm.
It is. That's, yeah.
Comes in handy in an interview with Winston Peters, for instance. You know you're going to go the distance because you know he will somehow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Can I ask a political or non-journalistic kind of newbie question? Anyone ever run with anyone, sort of politicians, do they run? I guess that some do. They might have the time or the lifestyle you would think could lend itself to lots of long dinners and stuff.
Yeah, no, I never did run. I chased a few politicians. I don't think I ever ran with any. My only sort of star running story was when I went to Australia and we were staying in a hotel. I was interviewing John Key. He must have been over for some goddamn thing. I can't remember what it was. One of those sessions with the prime ministers, Trans-Tasman prime ministers thing. And I was traveling with Marianne Ahern, who's a great TVNZ producer for many years. And she said, oh, Cathy Freeman is staying in this hotel. And I was like, that's cool. And she'd gone up to Cathy Freeman and said, oh, with Guy and Espino, he's the political guy for this thing. And she introduced me. And Cathy Freeman said, oh, do you want to go for a run tomorrow morning? I'm going for a run tomorrow morning. And I was like, sweet, yeah, cool. And got up. I came down to the lobby at, I don't know what time it was, 7 o'clock in the morning, something, a bit half expecting her not to be there, but she was, and we've been out for a run together.
Wow.
It was really cool. And I never took a selfie or anything like that because I didn't want to cheapen it. No, it's just the steroids that was in my mind, and it was a really cool experience. And she was, I think we did like a 10K run, and she said that's about as long as she's ever run because she was developing into longer distances because she was a sprinter,
400 metres, Sydney.
Famously. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I never forget when I was running with her and we were running along at sort of, pretty average sort of pace. And she said, sprinting's quite different because you kind of go like this. And it was like warp speed, and I sort of looked at her, and then she was about 100 metres ahead of me. It was just incredible. So I must have been in my late 30s, and I don't know how old she would have been, maybe in her early 30s. She certainly was past her medal winning time, but she wasn't showing off. She just went, oh, yeah, because you kind of run in a different way. And she just went into hyperspace sort of light speed sort of thing, and just – remember this, looking up and she's gone. It's like a cartoon, with the sort of spray of dust.
The mechanics of sprinters are just amazing, aren't they? But amazing.
It was a cool experience. And and as we were going past, people would be waving out to her and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's a really inspirational person. So that was just a really cool little thing.
You didn't turn up down in the lobby with that full on suit like she wore it at Sydney, did you? Remember she was in full lycra. All she had was her face showing and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
You hadn't gone and bought one of those for the run.
Nah, it might have been quite good in COVID times, eh?
True.
Bit of a PPE there. I used to run with Melissa Moon a few times too, back in Wellington. Do you know? She was a hell of
a
runner,
legend.
Eh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't kept in touch with her. She was another one who'd just make it look completely bloody effortless. Incredible running with her. Used to get sort of made up, and she'd have the beautiful made-up face, and it was quite sort of dainty, and you'd run through red rocks and she'd just like you'd be like sweating. Like, she'd be just like, she just walked out of a bloody salon. She's a hell of a runner.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And just a machine.
She'd
and
go straight just, up straight up that trail at Red Rocks, wouldn't she?
And she did the stair climbing stuff too, that's up the Empire State Building and stuff. She won a couple of those races. She's an amazing runner. Mm. And I don't know what she's doing nowadays, but that was pretty cool. But I haven't run with any politicians. Must be a couple who are.
Yeah, I remember working in Wellington sometimes along, I was going to say the terrace, but it was more along the waterfront, really. You'd see some of them out sometimes, and they'd sort of see you, and sort of there'd be a nod. But Matt Robson once, I remember seeing him run, which I was a little bit surprised by, no judgment, but he was getting out there. And it was, I was kind of a thought, well, it's a good thing to do because they're slaves to their desks, aren't they? We know
totally.
How many hours they work. It must just be hideous. To be able to get out for a run would be a luxury.
Yeah. There was an equation, wasn't there, about how many Ks you gain for every year that you're in that place. It was like 7 kilograms a year or something. The hours are horrendous. You know, there's a lot of drinking involved, or at least it was back in the day. The food was pretty appalling, and the stress, it just all led to pretty poor lifestyle. Mm. It saved me, literally, I reckon, the running, when I was in the gallery. But, I think it was a bit more common for the MPs to be at the bar rather than on the track, from what I remember.
3.2, not 3.2 Ks.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, what's your current role at RNZ?
Yeah, so I'm an investigative journalist, which I always wanted to call myself. I've got that on a business card, so I kind of love that. So I'm part of the In-Depth team. Veronica Schmidt is the In-Depth editor. She's great, great boss, and leads a great team of five or six of us. It's long-term project. So for me, it's podcasts, video documentaries. I've just made a doco that's going to screen on TVNZ as well, so that's cool. It's news stories, long writing pieces, genuinely multimedia, in-depth, long-form stuff, really, which is pretty cool. It's quite a luxury for me, and it's great.
What led you to journalism?
It's all I've ever done, actually. Probably what led me to journalism was probably flunking school cert maths. I've always been a language person. Always wanted to be a writer. My brother, older brother, went into journalism, and I probably twigged around that time that that's something I could do. When I started doing it for community newspapers when I was, in my very early 20s or something, and got a buzz and a kick from it. And 30 years later, that's all I've ever done. Tried to get out of it a few times too, actually.
Have you?
But I nearly went into PR and I nearly went into management, and I would have been shit at both of them. And I'm still here, and loving it. And in fact, if I could be so bold, I think I've done my best journalism in the last couple of years. I feel invigorated, and still feel I've got quite a lot to prove. And so I've gone back to the reporting side of it rather than the presenting side of it. It's really still, blowing my hair back, I suppose. I'm still loving it.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, you think about today's world, and I know all our kids are, people talk about they'll retrain 3-4 times over their life, so there's some equation. It's much like the politicians gaining weight one, it's some scary thing that they will retrain so many times over their life. But here's all three of us who've been in one career for I think I'm the youngest here, and I've been at my job, I've been registered 21 years, which blows people away. I mean, it's nice to see. It's really lovely to hear, actually, that, you're saying that you've been doing this for such a long time, like 30 years, and it's just still giving you the, hitting you right in the feels, as they say.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like, do something that your kids will understand, or do something that's easy to explain to people. What do you do? I'm a baker. I'm a nurse. I'm a journalist. I'm a doctor. I help people. I tell stories. Some of those basic things I don't think will change. I'm not so worried about platforms and technology now. I think in 2067, you'll still look to someone to tell you a story and to make sense of the world. I don't think that's going to, I went through some very dark times about journalism, and it's all going to finish, and the internet and social media, it's going to all kill it and everything. And you can still go down that path if you like, but it's okay. It's like what we're doing now, like people who are into running listening to people or listening to runners talk, there'll be an audience for that. And I think I feel the same about some of the stories I'm writing now. I mean, some of them are stories about a crime that happened 5 years ago, or a guy got shot by the police 6 years ago, and not many people care. But there's an injustice that's done, and you know, the tens of thousands at least will read about it, and some change might happen as a result of it. And you know, so I think your expectations are just. It's easy to kid yourself when you're in some of those big presenting roles that, you know, all these people are watching me and I'm doing something really important. But often it's not the case. And often there's more substance or feeling of value to be added when you've actually just done something small really well, or, you know, yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
It's interesting too, isn't it, that, I mean, we started out as print reporters and each of us has worked in so many different forms of storytelling. And nowadays, it's what I love as you were describing your current role. You fit the best way to tell the story to the story. Yeah. And that's the beauty. We've got so many different ways to tell stories nowadays. In the old days, we had, you know, eight pars to fill a news story, and that was it, basically. Whereas nowadays, there's just so many different ways to tell a story. It's exciting. Yeah.
It really is. And the podcast thing is great with that. Like we just did one which was basically on China. It's a massive subject. We didn't probably find out a hell of a lot of that stuff that other people didn't know. And a lot of it was doubt. And that's the great thing. I mean, you can listen to an incredible podcast, some of the most, you know, listened to podcasts, you know, the American Serial podcasts and stuff are about, they don't know whether a guy murdered someone or not. It's the whole podcast. What happened? I don't know. But on the journey, it's that human doubt and storytelling that we all have. And the ability of a journalist to share their doubt and insecurity is great. You know, it's not the all-seeing, I'm the, you know, presenter who tell you everything that's, you know, the truth and nothing but. You know, with podcasts and other forms of storytelling now, you can say, look, I don't know about this. What do you think? And so I think it's so much more nuanced, and it's quite human. So, yeah, that's why I'm optimistic about the media again now, because I think with all these different mediums that we're using, yeah, as you say, you can tailor it to fit the story, and there'll be an audience for it.
Do you have a favourite medium?
No, I don't. I mean, like for a killer big political interview, probably television. For an event that you have to see, like an earthquake or a volcano, you cannot beat television. For longer form current affairs storytelling, the podcast, the radio podcast is incredible. For colour writing, the long feature is it. You know, for just really hard facts, the radio story is really good. You know, and so Eugene's right. You really can go, and what we do now, we go, this would be a good yarn for such and such, or, you know, this isn't quite a hard-edged news story, but it's really interesting. We could string this out in a podcast, and you can just really tailor it like that. So, yeah, I like to mix it up, and the beauty of it now is that we are able to do, you know, play around with all those mediums, which is very cool.
Like I say, there's a lot to be in despair about journalism, but there's also a lot to be quite hopeful and enjoying. So yeah, and we can run and talk about it.
That's right. I'm usually in music. Do you listen while you run, or do you just have your thoughts going?
Depends what I'm doing. Sometimes I just need to be switched off and just with my own thoughts. Other times I'll have a podcast in my ear or some music. Yeah, it depends on the mood. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm the same. Like if it's raining, I'm like, I'm just going to go out in the rain, just have nothing but my thoughts. Other times I'll have music. I'm not usually. I did listen to a few podcasts running last lockdown, actually. Winds of Change.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah,
what
probably my favourite podcast. Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. And I listened to that running around this park, you know, 72 times or whatever for my run.
And then got the song stuck in your head.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's a beautiful podcast. I'd probably even listen to it again. But I used to, when I was running my road marathons, I used to have, I think it was the iPod days, you know, I'd be, and so I did for the last 15 Ks, I'd have this, you know, heroic sort of music on, and I'd have a, have the playlist designed for the last 15 Ks. So I'd switch that on as a treat and blast me through. So, you know, that's, that, because it does, build it can tempo. Really elevate you. Right. Yeah.
Matt'll be the one for music suggestions to get you going in the last 15K marathon.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's so like, yeah, I find if I'm on trails, like generally nothing, because I want to experience, you know, experience and listen what's behind me. But the forest is closed due to lockdown. So I have been running exclusively on the roads for the last sort of month, and that's been great. And I find that listening to music's really, really helped it. It's quite sort of meditative. And if you pick music that you actually like, I go back and revisit a record. Not that I run with a vinyl record player, but my little trolley that I drag behind me. If I listen to, you know, an album or whatever, it's really like you talked about that kind of mind body split. I find that really helps. You know, if you're just following a white line in the back roads of like Kumu around everywhere, it's quite nice to have a little bit of
that. That reminds me, around that, I think you did it too, didn't you? Eugene, that was it. The Legends Marathon.
Oh, that was we ran on the course together.
Oh, we did. You and I ran out that way. Yeah, I ran that. It was a bastard of a run, because I think it took me about 4 bloody hours or something, or 3:40.
Well, it's hilly.
Yeah, but it was hard, and it was low. Yeah, I got quite dark on that one, because they made you go down some back road and then come back up. I hate doing that. It's like psychologically, you know, it was one of those cul-de-sac runs, because I had to add on that bit to, was that the Legends Marathon? I remember running that out there.
It was on the old Lydiard course. Waitaroa, but yeah, they had to stretch it to make it the marathon. We got a friend who, I think he did it every iteration of it, didn't he, Gene?
It was Gene Andrews, every iteration. It was my first ever half marathon, and I remember I felt great afterwards, but again, I got something wrong and ended up on medication for like 6 months afterwards. The shock to my body. Yeah. Like it was my first ever half marathon. I was like, yes, amazing. And then my body just went, nah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was really hard. It was not to be too personal for podcasting. It was a staph infection. I got a staph infection, and it was on my skin, and it turned into a whole mess of unpleasantness.
Your body had been exerted.
Yeah. And then I got a little bit of staph infection, and I was working shifts, you know, young kids. It was just like done. But that was my first. I thought I went back and did it the next year, though. But
of course you did. I'd love to say, oh, I'm in the hospital. Oh, this is bloody great. Give me some more of that.
That's exactly right. It's not. I never claim to be this.
That's so marathon. That's exactly.
We do this for fun.
I lost 3 toenails. It was brilliant.
And it's your non-running friends will say every time something happens like that, well, running's bad for you.
How are your knees? So the question you always get: how are your knees?
What were you going to say, guys?
Sorry.
No, I was just wondering, have you run the Buller Marathon? That's a bloody good marathon.
No, but Eugene has a standing invite from the race director to go stay at his house.
Oh, it's a great run. I did the Buller about 3 times, I think.
Did you?
It's a great run, the Buller. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You crawl up to some sort of German cafe, and you're sort of going uphill for the first 10K, and then you turn around and you're running into Westport, and the town just goes nuts, and there's guys on the bagpipes and dudes trying to give you beer as you run along and everything. It's a bloody hoot. I didn't break any records, although I did do my best marathon time, the best road marathon time, 3:17 at the Buller Marathon.
Oh.
But it's a good.
How many beers?
Well, yeah, it was quite a few after that.
Not during that. You didn't take any of them as you ran past.
No, not after. No. But some do, yeah.
Oh, look, there's a guy named Dougie Kyle, and we talked about him a couple of podcasts ago. So the Rotorua, the Blue Lake 24-hour challenge that's happening next week, he's got the lap record, 19 5K laps, 19 beers.
You know. There's always a guy, eh?
He's incredible. He runs in like five finger shoes. You know, like he's an incredible dude. Like, yeah, a double.
It just
round.
Hurts when they beat you, though, doesn't it?
Oh no, he's not in the same. No. Like, he's not in the same. We are nowhere near the same league. It's
he's,
not like
he's
the
way up the road. Yeah,
he's
we trip
gone.
Over his cans. Hey, Guy, look, thank you so, so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. There is one question we have to ask you that we ask everyone, and that is, Guy Nesman, what is your greatest run ever? It doesn't have to have been a race. It's just a run that you think of fondly that just, you know, sings to you for some reason that you just look back on and think, that's a run I treasure.
Yeah. Christmas Day. I used to run a marathon on Christmas Day. I don't know why. I just used to do it for 3 or 4 years. And I remember in Wellington one time, because my family's in Christchurch. It's kind of on my own at that time. And I was living on my own and decided to run. I did a 45K run on Christmas Day. And if you want to see Jesus, run 45Ks on Christmas Day. And I remember this. This run, and it just went into that sort of euphoria stage. So I sort of just run over Red Rocks and run back down. I was into Lyle Bay, and I was just and I was just running home, and I just thought that was just awesome. And it was, yeah, it was a spiritual experience of 45K on Christmas Day. Brilliant.
What
and
time
there
did
was
you
no
start?
Race. There was no like 10 o'clock in the morning or something. Just four and a half hours or something. There was no race. There was no, I had a Garmin, a new watch I was trying out, and ran for 45 Ks. Loved it.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Oh, the things we do for fun. all right. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate it. And
Kua Pau Te Hau, that's one you can use. Don't forget
that.
Kua Pau Te Hau. That's right.
Yeah. All right,
I'm
Paul.
Stuck.
We hope you haven't left you like that after this conversation.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Nami. Yeah.
Great to talk. Cheers, guys.
I did nerd out the whole time that, because it's someone who fills up such a part of your life. Like, he was the person when I was making my morning coffee, and Lola said, he's the voice that I hear when the beats from the Bluetooth speaker get me up, but what a chat and what a guy his running and his honesty and, hammering it about Red Rocks and what a greatest run ever also. Just fantastic.
Running with Kathy Freeman too.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. I've never heard that story. That's great.
Incredible. Yeah. And imagine it would just be like you said, like that puff of dust and the silhouette still there, but she's gone. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, runners are just built differently to us, aren't they? Sprinters are built differently to us, aren't they?
100%. 100%. Mm. So look, thank you very much, Guyon, and thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio and on email at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and subscribe if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you, and you can read them on the website too.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, and CLE, and thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Thanks to Atleta Kieran. We've got a really great show lined up for you next week, so please tune in then.
Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.